Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Welcome to this new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. I'm delighted that we today have Karel Cooper. Karel is the Senior Vice President of Global Marketing at LifeIntent, and he runs a great podcast, the Minority Report podcast. Welcome, Karel.
Thanks for having me. Super excited to be here and really, really looking forward to this conversation.
So am I. To start with yourself and your Minority Report podcast, could you explain a little on what that podcast is about, what kind of topics you do, and how you came to start that podcast? Because you're already running it over 2 years, right?
Yeah, sure. So my co-host and co-founder, Eric Rickaden, he came to me with this idea, I want to say probably about 3 years ago. And the idea was to really highlight people of color, women, LGBTQ plus community within. And when he came to me with the idea, I loved it. And after a few conversations, we decided that creating a podcast was the best platform to tell these stories. And that's evolved into what we have today, which is Minority Report Podcast, which again highlights people of color, women, LGBTQ plus community within business, media, and technology. And to date, we have recorded and released 63 episodes.
Well, as a fellow podcaster, I would say, you know, it's something you have to do for the long run, I would say, right? Because it's hard to gain traction. The other thing that I would like to hear from you is like, how do you connect to listeners? What kind of methods are you using to actually find out if your message resonates with the audience?
Yeah, sure. And you are absolutely right. I think that, you know, podcasting is super popular right now. And everyone wants to start a podcast, which is great because it's an easy platform to launch and to tell stories. But I think what people also need to recognize is because there is so much competition for listeners. It is not an easy thing to grow your audience in the podcasting space. And so I think first and foremost, you have to do it for the love of wanting to do it and to tell the specific stories that you want to tell and have a passion around it. And again, that's why, you know, Eric and I have been doing it for 2 years, two plus years now, and really enjoying it. In terms of connecting with listeners, I mean, listen, we leverage pretty much all of the major social platforms out there, whether it be LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter. We release the podcast on a number of different podcast channels and networks, including Apple and Spotify and SoundCloud and Google. And for us, the feedback that we get from our listeners, either the comments on one of the podcasting platforms or the messages they send us on LinkedIn, lets us know whether or not we're heading in the right direction. And I think one of the interesting trends that we are starting to see as we grow, the guests that we are starting to have on the podcast are starting to come from inbounds. So when we first started the podcast, we were reaching out to everyone and get more and more guests. But now we're starting to see inbounds come in where PR companies or agencies that represent certain voices are asking if they can be on the podcast. And to me, that lets us know that we're heading in the right direction and growing.
Yep, absolutely. That's what we noticed the same, actually, because we're based out of the Netherlands, Europe. And in the beginning, we had like a lot of Dutch European listeners. And currently the majority is coming from the US, and we actually have a lot of, let's say, podcast agencies, and that's an industry on itself, right? So these podcast industries, they reach out to you as a podcaster, and there is ways to, let's say, list yourself on those podcasting agency lists, of course. But that's a great point you're making there. It's actually a way of measuring that you're doing right, because there's not a lot of statistics available for podcasters, right?
Right. And the other thing too, which has been a benefit that I didn't recognize at the beginning, is because this is a podcast that's run by Eric and I, we're doing all the work, right? And I've actually been able to learn certain things, certain tips, certain tricks that I've actually brought back internally at Live Intent from a marketing perspective in terms of how to utilize different social platforms and different things to test. So as the head of marketing at a larger company, you know, getting my hands dirty, if you will, and rolling up my sleeves to market my podcast has actually helped me become a better marketer as well.
Yeah, actually, what you're doing is creating the future here yourself. So, and that's be a part of it instead of predicting it or managing it. You know, it's like be a part of it is actually when you're what makes you best at doing it, I guess. So that's a nice, let's say, little bridge to what you're doing at Live Intent. You're the senior vice president of global marketing. What is it that Live Intent does?
Yeah, sure. So Live Intent, we've been around for 12 years, and we really started out as a way of solving dynamic ad delivery and email newsletters. So if you think about Google Ad Manager and how Google helps publishers deliver ads on the web, we started out as a company of solving that in the inbox, right? And because we are in this sort of unique position where we've actually built the advertising ecosystem within the inbox, our business has evolved over the last 12 years to where we now help 2,500 publishers and brands acquire, retain, and monetize their audience all around this sort of common stable identifier, which is the email hash, right? And so if you think about our platform, it helps marketers reach over 250 million unique users, unique readers, I would say, on a monthly basis, right? And what's interesting about that is a unique reader in our platform is an email open, an email hash, not a cookie, right? So we're talking about 100% logged in and opt-in environment as well.
Okay, cool. So you're the marketing manager over there, the global head of marketing. What is it that you do in your job? Do you have a team that you manage? Do you do a lot of stuff yourself? Could you explain a little on that?
Yeah, sure. So my team, I have a team of 12, including me, and my responsibilities oversee pretty much all aspects of marketing. So corporate communications, which includes PR, product marketing as well. So how are we positioning our products in the marketplace? How are we educating our customers on how to use our products and our go-to-market strategy? It also includes what we call demand generation, which is how are we helping the sales team fill the pipeline through paid media, through social media, through events, right? And sales enablement as well too falls into that department. And then creative and branding. And so my team sits across those particular areas of marketing. And I would say I spend half of my time today working with our executives on the future of the company, our strategy, and where we're going. And then the other half of my time working with the teams that I just laid out on executing on that strategy and support from a marketing perspective.
Okay. And one of the aspects I can imagine, and when you're talking about the future of ad companies, is cookie abandonment.
Yeah.
So that's a major issue, probably. That, and that's what we're going to talk about now. And this is one of the hot topics within the ad industry at the moment. Because can you explain what's going on, what Google's ideas are about cookies, and why it's such a hot topic?
Yeah, sure. So I think if you think about it from this perspective, which is thinking about it from the consumer perspective, right? It is all about, in my eyes, protecting the consumer, right? It is all about educating the consumer and making sure that the consumer feels safe when they're on the internet and that they understand what data they are providing and giving up and how that data is being used, right? And so a couple of years ago, you had Safari and Firefox come out with announcements of deprecating third-party cookies and making their browsers more safe. Google followed suit earlier this year with their announcement and setting a time frame around deprecating third-party cookies in the Chrome browser. And I think why there is so much focus on that particular announcement, one, it's Google, right? One of the biggest, if not the biggest company in the world. And two, I believe they currently have about 70% of the browser market share today, right? And so what we are doing at Live Intent, again, because our business has been built in the email environment, because everything that we do is has the email hash at the center of it, we are in the process of coaching and helping our publishers and brands with bridging the gap from a third-party world to a first-party world. And we feel that we are in a great position to help our publishers and brands do that, mainly because the environment that we've operated in for the last 12 years and that we've built our business on, which is the email environment, has already gone through what the browsers are currently going through, right? There's no cookies in email. There is heavy regulation and privacy laws in email with canned spam and with the need to sort of opt in, either single or double opt in for user consent before you send email. And so we've operated in this environment for 12 years, and we are now trying to leverage that experience and expertise to help, again, our publishers and brand clients bridge that gap from a third party world to a first party world.
Okay. And just because we have a lot of listeners with all kinds of knowledge, let's say levels, just to be on the same page, what's the difference between a first and a third party cookie?
I guess the best way to explain it is when you go to New York Times, it's the difference between the New York Times owning that particular piece of data or information versus a third party that is not the New York Times. Maybe that is the most simple and easiest way to explain it.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of, especially news media websites, have a lot of third party cookies on them, of course.
Right, so, right. That doesn't mean that that particular publisher doesn't work with those third parties, right? But it does mean that, you know, if you are going to a particular site, that, you know, they take more sort of control and ownership over the collection of data and how that information is used.
Like 70% of people are using Chrome as a browser, and as you already stated, Safari and Firefox already had some regulations on it. Apple is tightening rules also on the iPhone, on iOS as well. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. We recently had a conversation on geo-targeting as well, you know, because apps also share all your data. And, you know, that was done without a lot of, let's say, information that was shared to the actual user. Now, Google, you know, is going to, basically stop or preventing to use third-party cookies. When is that actually planned to take place?
Totally remember off the top of my head, but I believe it's 2022, but you could certainly Google that and find out. So we still have some time, right? We still have over a year. Yep. But the point there, though, is I think as a publisher, as a brand, you need to start preparing now, because this isn't a flip the switch and okay, now all of a sudden I have a first party data strategy and I'm ready to go, right? You have to start preparing for that now. And, you know, from our perspective at Live Intent, we see larger brands and publishers, they are preparing for it, right? You read plenty of news stories about the New York Times and how they're heavily invested in growing their subscriber base. I think they have something like over 5 million subscribers now. Recent news that just came out yesterday, Insider Inc. Bought a major stake in Morning Brew, right? And you would have to think that part of that is building up first party data, right? Because Morning Brew has millions of subscribers, right? But where I personally see some concern is when you get to the mid to small publishers. They seem to be lagging behind a little bit. And we know this because we recently produced some research. So we sent out a survey to a number of senior marketers and publishers at small to mid-sized companies. And we found that 39% of the marketers and publishers still don't have a firm plan to prepare for the end of the third-party cookie. And then we also found, which I thought was interesting, that 61% of those who responded and said that they have a plan in place, out of that 61%, 48% of those folks don't have actual have confidence in the plan that they say they have in place, right? And so that is where, you know, I think for us at Live Intent and for others, where we see some trends and we see some concerns, because the clock is ticking. 2022 will be here before we know it.
Absolutely. Right?
You know, look how fast 2020 has gone by, and you need to start preparing. And, you know, we also coach our publishers and brands on different ways that they should think about preparing as well too. And happy to dive into that as well.
Yeah, let's do that, because I'm comparing it a little to what happened 2 years ago with the GDPR compliance. Mm-hmm. We all had like marketing lists without opt-ins. You know, we had huge marketing lists, and all of a sudden, I think it was like May 2018, GDPR became got affected, and then you weren't allowed to send out emails anymore. So lawyers, general counsels, etc., within larger companies prevented email marketers from doing their job. We had like almost crying marketers on the list, on the line, like, yeah, I had a million people on my list, and now I only have like 50,000 left of them. What do I do now? And it all sounded like it had come like a surprise. Actually, yeah. A little like what you're saying here is like, that GDPR compliancy, you know, that they announced that, let's say, a couple of years before it got affected. So what you're saying here is we need to prepare. And yeah, let's dive into how we do prepare. And I can see that you want to share something.
Yeah, no. So I just want to add one more point to that. Right. I think obviously this year, 2020 has been a year like no other in mm-hmm. so many different ways. Right. With the pandemic, economy issues, all those sorts of things. So I get it from the standpoint that small to medium-sized publishers, especially those folks who probably have, you know, smaller margin for error, have had to focus on how they keep the lights on this year, right? And so they've had to be a little bit more on the defensive instead of on the offensive in preparing for the future. So I get it. I don't want to just sort of say that they've been sitting on their hands and not doing nothing. I mean, 2020 has been, an insane year. But I think now people really have to start getting going, right? And so a few ways that we talk to our clients and try to coach them on how to sort of think about this, right? The first one is going back to my point earlier about Safari and Firefox, right? Those two browsers turned off, deprecated, however you want to call it, third-party cookies some time ago, right? So that's already a problem that exists today, right? And so that's a perfect sort of training ground, if you will, to test new solutions, to test partners who say that they have a solution. It's a perfect place to see if, okay, can you get better resolution in those browsers? Can you make more money in those browsers? It's a perfect sort of testing ground today, right? Mm-hmm. The second thing that we go back to, and obviously we're going to say this to our customers because we are Live Intent, but also because we believe in it, which is the importance of growing your email subscriber base. And the reason why we feel that's important, two ways. One, we're seeing a huge surge in email engagement this year, right? Because of the pandemic, we were seeing this growing trend of email engagement prior to the pandemic, but I think the pandemic has accelerated that. And with this surge in email engagement, it's a perfect way for publishers and brands to connect with their audience, sell their product, and provide service to their audience. At the same time, you get people to sign up for your newsletters. Now you're collecting first party data, which can go into your identity graph, can go towards your first party data strategy in the future, right? So that's a second way of naturally doing it. The third thing that we talk to publishers and brands about is don't focus on just one piece of the pie, one identifier. look to build a holistic first-party data strategy. And what I mean by that is context plays into this, subscriber base plays into this, CRM data plays into this. Even though we sit in email, right, and we feel that the email address will be an important piece to anyone's first-party data strategy, we don't believe it's the end-all, be-all, right? You need to look holistically at how you collect this information and then how you provide a value exchange for your customers. And then I would say the fifth and final way that we look at this, or the fourth way, this is the fourth point, not the fifth point. The fourth point that we look at is think about how you are going to build the next generation of an identity graph. And that's either doing it on your own or partnering with someone. And the reason why we say next generation identity graph is because we believe that the points within that graph have to, at the center of it has to be a first party identifier, like an email hash, right? And the ability to tie different data points in a privacy consent manner to that identifier to then either build audiences and then ship those audiences out to your other partners where you can actually execute campaigns on them or make those audiences actionable is super important. And so I'll pause there. I know I said a lot, but this is sort of what we talk to our customers about.
But it's useful. So, you know, especially when you're talking about, let's say, the identity graph, growing email lists, that makes me and probably listeners also wonder, is like, yeah, of course, it's nice and it's necessary to have that identity graph. But how do you actually store that? How do you store that data? And how do you, let's say, segment those audiences in a useful, pragmatic way, so that it's not like a PowerPoint thing or like a nice presentation, a chart that you're showing in the boardroom, but something that you can actually use in your daily, let's say, marketing campaigns. How do you actually make that pragmatic?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I'll first by saying that, you know, obviously I'm not an engineer or a real technical person. So not going to get super into the nuts and bolts here. But what I will say is there are partners out there. There are tech providers out there like Alive Intent who do have the expertise in building that next generation of an identity graph. And you're right. As a marketer, I would totally agree with you. It does us no good to just collect data, right? And just have it, right? At the end of the day, it goes back to my point of it has to be actionable, right? Mm-hmm. So the ability to, and that's where we come into play. And that's where we sort of help our customers make it actionable. And I'll go a little bit deep into sort of our solution for it, right? So for us at Live Intent, it does start with a framework that we call Authenticated Bridge, right? And at a very super high level, Authenticated Bridge is where we help publishers and brands safely and securely connect their first party data and make it actionable to technology partners, right? So a good example of that is, let's talk about publishers right now, right? So one of the challenges that publishers have on the web today is the ability to recognize more users on their website, package that up into audiences, and then either sell those audiences themselves or make it available for marketers to monetize, right? So what we do is within our Authenticated Bridge framework is what we call the non-ID, which is a privacy safe identifier that has a one-to-one relationship with a unique email address. And so how we are coaching our publishers today in terms of going beyond email, going out onto the web, is a publisher that works with us has the ability to enable the non-ID in their header technology on the web, right? And again, the non-ID represents an email hash that's tied to our graph. And by enabling the non-ID in your header bidder solution, We then have the ability to work with that publisher and their SSP that they work with to package up their first party audience, which again has the email hash that sits at the center of that, and offer that up to marketers to target against, again, in a first party way.
Cool. Hope that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That makes sense. Hopefully, you know, it gets a little technical, but you know, we're the marketing technology podcast. So probably listeners will follow, what we're saying here.
Yeah. And then just to add to that, one more thing. So on the other side of that, because remember at the beginning of this, I said how we've built this ad ecosystem. And so we support publishers and marketers, right? So on one side of that, the authenticated bridge, the non-ID helps publishers build audiences and make those audiences actionable in their header, right? To either sell themselves or offer to marketers. On the flip side of that, we work with marketers in the same way, in the same fashion, right? So if a marketer has an audience, right, they can upload that audience, they can onboard that audience into our platform. We will match that audience and enhance that audience against our graph, which again, the email hash sits at the center of that. And then the marketer has the ability to now target against that audience in their DSP of choice across the web, right? And so we've created sort of this this ecosystem of using first-party data, first-party audiences with the email hash sitting at the center of that for publishers and marketers to transact on that particular ID out on the web in cookie-challenged environments.
Cool. So cookie challenge environments. That's a nice way of saying it. You know, that's like, I haven't heard that one yet. But so you've given four ways of how marketers can actually deal with that cookie abandonment, which is common in Google, which already is there in Firefox and in Safari. I want to move a little to where you started, because at the company you're responsible for a couple of areas, right? In marketing and life intent, you're doing a couple of areas of marketing. And because in the marketing technology podcast, we're also looking at getting some tips from the professionals. Mm-hmm. So you being a professional in marketing at a company that is doing very well, what kind of tips can you give to listeners, especially when you're talking about two topics that you mentioned, sales enablement and lead generation? So maybe we'll start with sales enablement, because sales enablement, especially to the listeners here in Europe, is something that's a very, very hot topic in the US at the moment. So everybody is talking about sales enablement with companies like HighSpot, like Seismic, et cetera. All those companies are around there, but it's not very well and very much adopted yet here in Europe. So can you elaborate a little on what you're doing in sales enablement, what's meant by it, and how you are enabling those people at the sales departments to do their job better?
Yeah. So first and foremost, when I think about marketing at Live Intent and how I think about being a marketer, at the end of the day, we are helping create awareness in the marketplace for our products and services. And then we are partnering very closely with our sales team to support them in their efforts, right, to bring in new business and to retain our customers and to grow adoption for our products and services. To me, sales enablement fits right smack in the middle of that, right? Because it is the ability to help our sellers be better at their job, right? And so that's everything from making sure that they have the right sales materials, making sure, and this might sound very simple, but it's a huge problem in I think our industry, making sure our sellers know where to actually find the materials to use, and when is the right time to use certain pieces of content throughout the different stages of the funnel. You mentioned HighSpot a minute ago. So we used HighSpot. We actually implemented HighSpot within our organization a little over a year ago, I believe. And it's been a fantastic tool for us to use to do just that, where we list all of our content. It's become, in a way, our internal knowledge base for our sellers, where they find all the latest and greatest content. It gives us the ability to track how often certain pieces of content are being used and shared as well. And I think that's important, because the more we have insights into those trends, the more that we understand as a marketing team, maybe what new pieces of material we need to create or enhance or remove or get rid of, so on and so forth.
Okay. And are you, besides HighSpot, is there anything else that you're using in the sales technology space there? Like, are you using stuff like Outreach or maybe video, like Vidyard or something? Is that stuff you use?
Yeah. So we do use Outreach, right? For messaging, really, for our SDR team and our sellers, right? Where we will put, where we will help our sales team and SDR team craft messages that we want to get out to prospects, if you will, right? A great example is seasonal messaging, right? We're about to enter the holiday season. Yep. So a few months ago, obviously we spent time working with our sellers and our SDR team on what's the right type of messaging we want to get out to prospects and to customers preparing for the upcoming holiday season. One, reminding them that, you know, LiveIntent is a great place to market and to sell products, and to maybe some certain tips and tricks that you can use for the upcoming holiday season. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So that's also a something, you know, that whole sales enablement space is really a developing stuff in Europe, as it is in the US, of course. But you guys already are, let's say you started it like 2 years ago, probably, that whole hype in sales enablement, and it's just taken off here in Europe.
Yeah, definitely. And we looked at it as we were building out the marketing team as, again, thinking about the support that we provide to our sellers, right? Which they are a customer of the marketing team. They are a partner of the marketing team. And how can we help them be better at their job? And it started out with us first hiring a sales enablement manager who has done a fantastic job in that position since she's been on board with us. And then from there, evaluating what is the right types of tools that we need to be using to, again, help our sellers be better at their job. And HighSpot was certainly key to doing that and implementing.
Nice. The other topic, lead generation. Do you, let's say, run any marketing automation platform? What kind of campaigns are you running that? Can you share something on that?
Yeah, sure. So from a lead gen perspective, we have a number of different tactics and tools that we use. Obviously, our own email newsletter is important. Right. That's important. We certainly do a mix of paid media and social media. Search is key to what we do. I would say, you know, and I'm thinking about this. This is top of mind for me because we're obviously planning for 2021 next year. In the past, in-person events was a huge lead gen tactic for us. That wasn't the case this year, obviously. Right. You don't get the same ROI from virtual events as you do in-person events. And so I do think that the majority, unfortunately, I do think the majority of 2021 is going to be virtual again. And so now I'm thinking through what are the different ways in which I can fill that gap, right? Because again, the ROI is just not there from virtual events as it is for in-person events. At the same time, my numbers and the expectations on me and the marketing team aren't going to change. And so what are some other ways in which we can, again, create sort of that top of the funnel awareness and get people into our funnel and down the path? Part of what we're thinking about is how we do more of our own sort of hosted virtual events, maybe partnering up with other partners in the space. I do think that content and content marketing is going to be key to what we do next year as well. We released a few different eBooks this year that performed very well for us. We did a creatives best practices eBook. We did an eBook where we released some data around COVID-19 from a survey that we did with our publishers and advertisers. Upcoming, we have actually a publisher monetization ebook that's coming out pretty soon that people should check out. And so creating that content that people want and how we go about marketing, I think is going to be much more important to our success next year than it has been in the past, mainly because in-person events won't be here.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you're saying this because especially the thing about the ROI that's not the same on online events as it is on offline events. Because when I just look in my LinkedIn, let's say timeline, there's all kinds of marketers shouting out how great their online events were. But when I talk to them in person, like I'm to you with that, they're all, let's say complaining that the ROI isn't there, that it is not bringing them the leads they used to have on their, let's say, trade shows or other events or roundtables, lunch and learns, whatever events you were doing. So the majority of B2B marketers, at least that I talk to, wish that they can go back to all the in-person events as soon as possible. Hopefully, there is going to be a vaccine shortly, but you don't know. Your president already promised us one month ago. Let's not go into politics here, but we both start laughing there. So we have to get back to those events. The other thing that I do think, and I start to talk a little bit about more and more about this with B2B marketers, is when you're comparing virtual events the way we are doing them now, basically what we're doing is we're bringing an offline event online. So mm-hmm. we expect people that went to a trade show. So I myself, for example, yearly visit the Internet Summit down in Raleigh. And, I fly down to Raleigh and I spend a couple of days there, fully focused on the event. This year I got an invite to go to the virtual one. I'm no way I'm going to spend 2 days behind my screen and listen to, maybe on a second tap or whatsoever, but
yeah,
the majority of events just are copies of the offline events and then brought online without the dynamics that you would have online. So if you compare this, when I'm comparing this to the gaming industry, when I'm looking at kids and even grownups, spending days behind a PS4 or an Xbox or whatsoever, what's in that Xbox or PS game that is not in the event? It's like, if you could use that gamification, kind of, engagement that is, maybe we should talk to the game industry instead of the event industry.
That is an awesome point. And I never thought of it that way, but you are absolutely right. Right. There has to be something that creates better engagement in the virtual world, because the part about the in-person events that you can't replicate in the virtual world is running into someone in the hallway of a hotel where the conference is at, or running into someone
or a speaker
or running into someone at the bar at 6 o'clock or the dinners, or to me, that's where the relationships were built in the in-person events. That's where maybe a lead was turned into, someone who went from, awareness to consideration, right? That's where it happened. And you cannot replicate that on a Zoom hangout or anything. Oh. Like that. And so you're right. Maybe there does need to be some sort of gamification to it. But it just isn't the same.
The thing is, if I look at my, I don't even have to look at my kids. I look at friends that I have, it's like, I'm not much into games myself, but I do, see that whole, engagement that gamers have with the games. And if I look at my kids, the friends that I have, they spend hours, days behind, they make friends in those games.
Yeah.
The way you are teaming up or talking to people at the bar at a trade show. You know, so there needs, I think we should start talking to the people in the game industry instead of the event industry to make this a success.
You're right. I like that. Let's run.
let's go there. So it was great talking to you, Karel. And you know, it's like I think you gave us a lot of great tips. I'll summarize those in the show notes, of course. You shared some good information about your own lead gen, your own sales enablement, of course. Should people have questions to you, where can they reach you?
Yeah, sure. Anyone out there, you can email me directly at kcooper@liveintent.com. So kcooper@liveintent.com. Happy to have a conversation. Happy to talk more about our Authenticated Bridge framework. Happy to talk more about marketing in general and share strategies and tips.
Great. It was great having you. Thank you very much for your contribution.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Also, if you want to be a guest or know someone that should be a guest to our show, shoot me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you for listening.